Welcome to the Knit More Girls podcast, a multi-generational knitting production. This is our director's cut featuring Stephen B., which has been brought to you without commercial interruption by Abstract Fiber, the best place to buy the most beautiful yarn and fibers ever. We had the good fortune of having the opportunity to interview Stephen at Stitches West in 2015, and I hope you find this interview as interesting and engaging and really exciting as we did. So without any further ado, enjoy. This week we are joined by the amazing, brilliant, and inspiring Stephen B. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, you've got a lot of background. So let's talk about how you came to knitting. How did you end up where you are?
How did I come to knitting? Stephen B. is short for Stephen Berg. Mm-hmm. Berg being Swedish and German. My mother escaped from East Germany after the Second World War, and the only thing she brought with her were her shoes and her knitting.
Huh.
She was like a refugee, so she was in a camp for a year and taught knitting. And when I was four and a half, five, I wanted to watch the cartoons. She called it the boob tube. And I had to be productive if I wanted to watch the boob tube, so I learned to knit. So initially, the pictures of me are wrapping your yarn around the old Canadiana needles. They were green was one size, blue was another, red and yellow. And she said I imitated her. So I was wrapping them. And then about five or six, I learned how to knit full on. And I started making Barbie doll dresses. My neighbor lady, Grandma Erickson, she wasn't really a grandma, but she would help me sew sequins and bugle beads on. So I would take cardboards and sketch out a scene, and then I would put a dress on it and go to the dime store and buy the shoes and the tiara and make a whole little vignette and sell them to the girls in the neighborhood. So instead of a lemonade stand, I had a Barbie doll dress stand.
You were doing fashion when you were...
Yeah, I was doing fashion early on. So I grew up doing knitting and then the 70s crochet and then macrame and hairpin lace and broomstick lace. And had a business, and I sold my wares in school and every church bazaar and everybody that would look at me. And it was cute. I was a little boy that did this, and I was better off with, I got along with the ladies better than the kids in my school. Precocious. Paid for my first year of college, Minneapolis College of Art and Design, a rather prestigious design school, with all the money I had made from knitting and crocheting.
That's not something
That's
small.
Impressive.
It was, at the time, $13,000. Now it's $30,000, of course. We're talking the 70s, and I wanted to make a difference in the knitting world. So I started knitting on size 50 needles. Actually, I called them size 1,000 because we carved them out of dowels from the hardware store. Picture this. So it's 1982. I'm holding five strands of yarn together at a time and knitting these sweaters. We're doing bat wings, plunging V-backs, plunging front and back. So we had to duct tape them to the model's shoulders. And I'm doing runway shows all over Minneapolis. Decided that I had outgrown Minneapolis College of Art and Design after the second year, so moved to New York. So I loaded up a station wagon with a friend of mine. We applied at Parsons summer program. We got in, and we moved to Manhattan. Driving to Manhattan the first morning, we get there Sunday morning, and we're pulling into the city, and there's like some punk rocker stumbling out of a club with a pink mohawk, and we're like, yes, we've made it home. This is where we belong. That was 81. Went to Parsons for the summer and then changed to FIT and completed my degree at FIT in fashion and worked on 7th Avenue, odd jobs, and then worked at Saks Fifth Avenue in the evening on Fifth Avenue, and then had a phone solicitation job in the evenings till 2 in the morning because we worked with Hawaii. So, and then had time to go clubbing.
Of course.
Of course.
Because you're in New York.
Because I'm New York. Andy Warhol lived upstairs. We lived on Union Square. Andy Warhol lived upstairs. We'd go to the Mud Club down in Soho to hang with Deborah Harry. And it was all going on. So I'm living this, like, poor designer kid by day and glam kid by night. And we had so much fun. And I am designing away. And I am designing. And I am making $110 a week. And I'm like, I am dying here in Manhattan. So I called my mom up one day. And I said, what do? I want to come home. So I'm to Minneapolis, back to Minneapolis, and opened up my own business, Bergen Associates, thinking that way it would allow me to be anything I wanted to be at any time in my life. And I started designing those more of those sweaters with the plunging back and the big shoulder pads and doing more runway shows. And I was successful. I got into department stores. Dayton Hudson was a big department store in Minneapolis at the time, and I got my collection of sweaters. They all had jewels or crystals or fur or something going on.
You're speaking to my mother's heart right now. You had her at Batwing sleeves, by the way. And
I had so much fun. And they were selling out. And my sweaters were going for $1,200, $1,800 a piece at the store.
Now, you were making these yourself.
I was making them myself. I would sit all day, which is funny because working so much with Stephen West right now, I see him knitting all the time. And I'm like, because some days I'm just tired. Mm-hmm. And he knits 8 hours a day nonstop. And I'm like, maniac, you're a maniac. And then I think back, oh, so was I at 24, 26. I used to do that. I'd sit in my apartment and knit all day long, mm-hmm. into the night, watch movie after movie after movie, and we didn't have no Netflix, let me tell you. videotape. When that tape got stuck in the player, I just pulled it out and started knitting with it. Mm-hmm. Let no continuous strand remain unknit is my slogan. I did. I started knitting with unusual findings, like cassette tape, VHS, copper wire, telephone wire, bungee cord.
So what's your favorite thing so far?
Probably right now, I would say my 16-millimeter film strip, because the story is, when as a kid, mm-hmm. my mother would send me 1 year to boys' summer camp in northern Wisconsin, and the next year I'd stay with my grandma in Germany and alternate. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't a big fan of the outdoors. So here I am in boys' summer camp on Teal Lake, and there were mosquitoes, first mm-hmm. of all. So that shut me down. And then we had to do sailing, canoeing, rowboating, swimming, and camping. And it was back in the days of these heavy, old, moldy canvas tents. I hated it. So all my memories of those days were tied into these reels of film. Mm-hmm. And I found them when I moved. Mm-hmm. So I said, all those years of contention with that situation, I'm going to knit it into a sweater. And now I bring it to all my shows. I wear it. And people admire it.
Yeah.
Because it's so unique, unusual. And so it's given me a whole psychological spin on the value of those days and being able to knit them away. And so I work a lot of that knitting philosophy into my presentations and my inspirational talking that I do. Mm-hmm. Because knitting is such a therapeutic pastime, yeah. and hobby and craft and skill. And, you know, I always get into these discussions, is it art? Or is it craft? And you know, it's both. Mm-hmm. The craft that you learn to execute your art. Mm-hmm. And I could be working in acrylics, oils, copper, bronze, any kind of art medium, but I chose fiber. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of my sweaters that are collaborations with other artists and other findings and Hardware Hanks sweaters, and I put them in galleries. Because mm-hmm. one of my theories is that the world still perceives knitters as grannies in Birkenstocks and rocking chairs. And you'll see that every once in a while, like Christmas ads and stuff like that mock the knitter. And we should take ourselves lightly and tongue-in-cheek. But at the same time, I want the world to realize how cool knitting is and that it is a form of art. So I put my sweaters in art galleries. Mm-hmm. I make get agreements with galleries. And so that they look at it from a different perspective. Knitters don't necessarily come to those galleries. It's artists. Mm-hmm. And so they're going, wow, oh, that's knitting?
Yeah.
And so with my new, I'm launching a reality show, and our first episode is on YouTube. And with that, I want to show the world the crazy antics of the knitters today. And mm-hmm. so I'm working with Stephen West, going to New York, we're at my studio. We're doing the Knit and Crochet Show in Pittsburgh. It happens in March. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with the mayor of Pittsburgh, and we're knitting the bridge or something crazy. And then I'm meeting with some big Pittsburgh. There's a football team in Pittsburgh, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think they're the Steelers.
There you go.
I'm guessing. And someone will correct
anyway,
me.
Anyway, I'm supposed to meet with one of the bigwig all-time Hall of Famers from the Steelers.
Okay.
And supposed to wear all the football ring, or the
football gear?
What's the...
Jersey?
Super Bowl rings.
Oh, wow.
So I guess it's
a
big deal. I don't know. Some guy has, won all the different ones. I don't know. So anyway, it's putting knitting in different perspectives, mm-hmm. and different situations so people take notice.
Yeah.
And we launched a snippet for it's called Knit York City is our next episode in the reality series. And Reese Witherspoon, just an hour before I got here, liked it on Instagram.
Awesome. So that's
we're
exciting.
We're hoping for great momentum.
It'll
and
be
we
good.
Do a cute thing on a spoof on what's the movie she was in? Legally Blonde. And the Bend and Snap. Well, we do the shawl toss. The dip and toss.
Oh,
so,
I need to learn how to do that.
It's really fun. We do it in every class that we do. Stephen and I started doing the tour because we wanted to inspire knitters. And we felt that people were a little staid in their cabling and their intarsia and their yarn use. So our message really is that there are no rules.
Mm-hmm.
There are no mistakes. We make only variations.
Mm-hmm.
And you should buy the yarn you like. It was that way perhaps 10, 15 years ago when novelty yarns came out because you bought 1111 and you put them all together and knit a scarf.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two different types of knitters. There are crafting knitters that get on board every time knitting has a craft trend, like fun fur, ruffle yarn, felting, things that don't take knitting skills as much as the yarn does all the work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the diehard knitters that remain. We ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm.
We get a career. We kind of knit less. Then we have children and we knit less. And then we get back into knitting. And we kind of follow the rules. But I don't know who ever made up any rules. I can't fit. Is it in the Bible? I don't think so.
Are some rules, but I think that they were agreed on by consensus.
Right.
But not by people like you and
right.
Well, I'm a big rules person. I like structure because...
So I don't know where the rules came from. So we're trying to study that and understand that and then say, okay, if you learn the rules and you know how to do this, then you can break out of this box and do it
Your
own way.
It's like jazz. You have to have music theory before you can play it.
Exactly.
Before you can improvise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So take your cable classes, take your intarsia, learn how to do a short row, whatever you want to do. And then come listen to us, because we're the fiber evangelists. We'll have a Sunday revival meeting, you know?
Yeah.
We'll get spark your knitting with, we tell everybody, just in the bottom of your knitting bag, just in case of emergency, you should also always have, one, a pop color, two, a little bit of sparkle, and three, some texture.
Mm-hmm.
So that whenever your knitting gets too boring or monotonous or you're stuck or you're sad, you pull one of those emergency elements out and you introduce it into your project.
That's a really good idea. So I want to talk about rules and not rules and fashion, because you have a real fashion background, and anyone who looks at your stuff can see that it's not something you'll find on the rack at Target. It's not something you'll find on the rack at Saks. It's not something you'll find on the rack anywhere. It's truly unique pieces that assert themselves. They're not boring. They're interesting, and they're not for everybody. They're, you know? Like,
I agree.
I'm not describing this well. It's fashion forward, but it's more runway than sidewalk. But you can wear it on the sidewalk. Does that make sense?
It does.
And it sticks out, and it's distinctive, and it's exciting.
The reason I knit, because you know what? There are so many knitters. They have classic and tradition down. I don't knit for the tradition of knitting.
Mm-hmm.
My heritage, or the Irish Isles, or all that. I don't knit for that reason. I knit because I came from a fashion background. I love art. So I knit for art, fashion, and pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, I use all these crazy materials. Let no continuous strand remain unknit. Or crocheted. I'm a dual bi-needler. And my new cruise that I'm doing in May is we have one session of knitting and then one session of crochet, and we alternate. And I'm trying to bridge the gap because I feel it's so disparate sometimes.
Do you think that's because of your background? Because your mom...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I just feel that like crochet's got such great properties for certain things and knitting for the other, and they should meld together.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't stand on either side of the line. And sometimes crocheters get a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're frugal, and they and they have all these things, and their garments are stiff, and so I'm trying to break down that.
Mm-hmm.
But in context to your previous question, I like my things to be quick and fast. I have a attention deficit, so when I knit, I like to get it done. I call it the weekend project or knit it in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my image. Never really happens for me, but get home from work Friday night. Sit down with a cup of tea, glass of wine, start a new project. For me, there's no bigger high than starting a new project. Getting that skein out, the needles out, cast on, gauge or not, it doesn't matter. I just love it. It's like, woof. And then I knit Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday, maybe afternoon, I pull out that project that I have in the bag that's been on the needles for a long time, because you need that. I need that 2-3 hours to sink myself into it, and where am I at in the pattern, and where am I going, and what have I done? In the meantime, I do all these pop culture projects that are fast and furious, and then I finish my cowl in that evening Sunday, and I block it, and I wear it to work on Monday. That's my image of my knit projects. Mm-hmm. I don't do a lot of complicated stitches, and I don't do a lot of intricate shaping. I like origami of knitting. Mm-hmm. I like taking shapes. I a lot of times take a bed sheet and cut the shape out and try it on and put different armholes in and drape it. And then it comes from my fashion background. Mm-hmm. And then knit to the shape. And that's one of the classes that I do teach. Mm-hmm. No written words allowed. So less structure.
No written words allowed?
No written words allowed.
Interesting.
And it's fun because people are so scared. We start on a very small scale to get them introduced to it. But again, my 7-day knitting cruise to Bermuda, where it's going to take those days and actually do a whole project.
That's amazing.
No words. You can take notes. I let people take notes. But it's not for reproduction.
No.
It's not intended. It's a personal experience because I'm all about enjoying the journey. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we're so hard set on the end result that we spend all this time with anxiety of how's it going to turn out? How's it going to turn out? Oh, my God, it's not going to fit. Oh, it's not going to be the right color. They're not going to like it. We worry about all these things that maybe never happen. Mm-hmm. And so how do I get ourselves into the moment and enjoy the journey we're on? Mm-hmm. And that's what my sessions, my inspirational sessions are about.
Okay. So let's talk about inspiration, because you seem to pull things out of the air and do really neat stuff with it. Like, I would have never thought to knit with cassette tape or film or phone cords or bungee cords. You've clearly got, like, a filter for something cool. Or are you just like, this looks like I could probably work with it? Mm. And just grab it.
It's the whole art side of it. Mm-hmm. I look at everything and look at the possibilities and not the limitations. I'm not good at rules. And honestly, I never purposely set out to break rules. I just don't know how to follow them because mm-hmm. I march to my own drummer. And sometimes I don't know I'm breaking a rule. And all of a sudden, I'm like reminded that I am. And I'm like, oh, sorry, didn't mean to hurt anybody's feelings. So I go through this world in this kind of like my own glow. And that's why Stephen West and I get along so well, because he's definitely in his own glow. And together, we've made this mark on the recent knitting trend. And it's all about enjoyment. Mm-hmm. It's about enjoyment, happy. We have a blast at everything we do, whether it's shopping, eating, sleeping. We always have fun. And so we bring that energy to the stores that we do the workshops in, mm-hmm. the events like Stitches or Vogue that we frequent. Because we like to see smiles on people's faces. We're not for everybody. We're flamboyant. We're out there. We know that. And the more we get in the public eye, the more controversial we become. Mm-hmm. And we continually push the envelope.
I think that's important in fashion and in art.
I love fashion. We love fashion. We spend far too much money on fashion. But I also love supporting artists that are up and coming, so I really search that out, whether it's in our own knitting business or in fabric or cut and sew or a runway line or art. Recently, a jeweler in Minneapolis, who's really talented and made me my gorgeous SB ring, really didn't have money for a jewelry studio, mm-hmm. so I gave him a corner in my firehouse that I own in Minneapolis and set up his jewelry shop. And then he worked there for a year and a half, and he was able to make enough momentum to get his own place. So I love that kind of springboard for other artists. Now
well,
that
it's very supportive.
Aging well.
Okay, so you've done a lot of stuff, and it sounds like over the years you kind of follow what was kind of up and coming and hip and that. What do you see as the next thing? Because you always come back to knitting, it sounds like.
Knitting, fiber art, yes. I think I'm taking a turn to go back to a bit more of my artistic endeavors. I've been very commercial and very marketing business-minded mm-hmm. and getting my store, Stephen B., off the ground. Mm-hmm. I had two stores. Yarn Garage was my first. And then Stephen B. when I bought my firehouse in Minneapolis. So that was a wonderful renovation. And it's kind of whimsical and it's kind of a dream, you know, buy a big old building with a history and a story and a fireman's pole and all that stuff. And then in order to make my staff less crazy, I closed the Yarn Garage this last year so I could focus on my travels. And I bought a big old Victorian house with a third floor where I could make my art studio. So I want to go back to that and my sewing and my snakeskin trims. And I just was in Iceland and bought fish skin to do cool stuff with. And I dyed the Icelandic sheep fur lime green. And so I'm going to do that. And I set up a dye lab. So I have these big photographic sinks I bought so I can do felting and dyeing in them. And not for commercial purposes. I'm not going to dye my own yarn, but for everybody else. I'm just doing it for me. But that's what I want to get back to. More of an artist. And as I'm aging, enjoying everything I'm doing and letting my staff run the store, I'm trying to do less micromanaging and more Stephen managing.
That's important because you have to feed your creative spirit.
Yes.
So what feeds you creatively?
Wow. You know, it used to be whatever was happening in the world. You know, celebrities and runway shows, and I used to follow Jean-Paul Gaultier in Paris like a god, and I don't do that anymore. I think I've got so much in my head to last me the rest of my life that I follow my own, what tickles me. It's what tickles me. So right now, new color is tickling in. My favorite is, oh, I bought this in it's a
tassel.
Tassel, and it's my new color, and people call it aquamarine or teal or Tiffany blue. Yes. I call it toothpaste because it reminds me of this little kid. I always wanted this color toothpaste. I wouldn't take the other colors. I had to have this color. And so I was in Iceland, and we were I was turned on to tassels and fringe. This I'm wearing a vest with all this fringe on
it's fantastic.
And it's an Icelandic designer. So I'm looking more in the nooks and crannies for inspiration these days rather than the obvious. And trying to be me, more me, and not worried about what the rest of the world says. And I think that, for me, has come with age. Not trying to...
It's a lot of personal growth that takes to get... To be comfortable with who you are.
That's my next book.
Personal
It's
going
to be all about me and my growth and the crazy antics of my life with a knitting pattern thrown in between that were inspired by those periods of my life.
I'd read that.
And it's just... because
we should review that.
So many times I've gone to publishers and they're like, oh, this is really cute because I've got two chapters done. And they're like, this is really great, but could you just give us 12 hat patterns? And I think that era of books with 12 hat patterns is over and we're moving on. Ravelry has changed it. The internet has changed it. And I believe that yarn shop owners, knitters, vendors need to embrace the internet and become part of it. And
it's not,
not
just
balk
a trend.
At it.
It's not going to disappear.
Complain about it and the business it's taking. Become part of it. Find your own way of doing it right for you. Okay?
Well, you also have a very strong head for business because you've managed to...
I was vice president of a major clothing company. So,
so that's not nothing.
So I was working with billions of dollars at one point. And I lived in Hong Kong and traveled the world. And I've been to every country in the world except Australia and New Zealand, which I plan to do next year.
So how do you balance the business mind and the creative mind? Because if Anna Zilborg did a great lecture on opening day, where she talked about creativity and marketing and selling and at which point things need to stop being one and start being the next thing. So it's a complicated question.
I think that I do it naturally. The marketing comes naturally to me because I don't look at anybody else in the business. I don't look at competition. I don't look at other people in your own business as competition.
Because
I think
your
we're all in
different.
It together to promote each other, to because it's the synergy and the energy that we provide that provides the momentum for the whole world. If you're out there on your own struggling and floundering, and it's like there's no momentum to that. But when I look at what I should be doing next, I look at other businesses that are successful. Apple, for instance. You know, Steve Jobs, one of his sayings was, don't try to be better, try to be different. And I believe in that wholeheartedly because I'm not better than anyone. I just like to be different than anyone else. And so I take that saying and strongly go forward with it. I like making a little bit of a mark on the world, and I'm made for the stage. When I was young, I either wanted to be an actor, entertainer, or a fashion designer, and now I get to be both. So I love being on stage. I love making people happy, mm-hmm. making their eyes glow and their smiles on their face, and I can do that through the work that I'm doing with these workshops, mm-hmm. and traveling and being at trade shows and sharing my patterns with people.
Yep, and your workshops and stuff are unusual. You're not just sitting down, taking notes, and doing a little mm-hmm. bit of knitting.
No, we call them workshops instead of classes. I hate the word lecture. Vogue makes me do lectures. I'm like, they're not lectures. Maybe they're presentations. But workshops, yeah. We break it down to, we do a little bit of work, we knit, we do some swatching and sampling it, because I have lots of tips and tricks, crazy ways of doing things that I share. But a little bit of work and a lot of shopping, so workshops. And I love to help people shop, and I put colors together and I make them look at yarn and fibers different ways than they've ever looked at it before. Mm-hmm. For years, I've always done it, is mixology, mixing fibers and strands. And I love working, say, a linen with a silken mohair and cross an animal fiber with a plant fiber and really the unexpected. I mix habu and stainless steel into almost everything I do. I never, ever go to a store or purchase for myself a skein of yarn and I need 7 more. I need 8 skeins in the same dial lot. I just don't do that. I buy what I like, mm-hmm. and then I use through color gradation, color blocking, color work, use everything that I've gathered. So I work it as an artist. So you think of a painter, Van Gogh or whatever, with an artist's palette, and he's got this little thumb through the hole, and he's got this whole rainbow of globs of paint, and he's got white and black here to make tints and shades. That's how I look at yarn. Mm-hmm. So I use a little of this, and I pull a little of that into it, and then I grade that into it, and it gives it a whole new life. So, like, for worsted or an Aran weight, I never go to those weights. Mm-hmm. I combine to achieve that weight. Mm-hmm. And most often I look up at a needle size, a label on a yarn, and I'll go up a size or two in needles to accomplish the feel and drape that I want. Because, I mean, it's probably the most commercial equivalent I could come up with is maybe Eileen Fisher. Mm-hmm. And her commercial brand, mm-hmm. and the way she does knits, Shapeless. Where Stephen and I are working on our new collection called Flip and Wear. Everything you could turn upside down and wear different ways, and you could put the armhole around your neck and wear it over your shoulder. And then we love the jewel clasp, JUL, the leather things that snap together, because mm-hmm. you can put them anywhere on any sweater. You don't have to plan buttonholes or closures. You just move them around and make a new garment. So we're all about the new shape of things to come.
That's really exciting.
Yes.
If you have one tip that has stood out for you in your experiences with knitting and crocheting and fiber that you found to be immensely useful or changed how you knit / other fiber things, what would it be that you wanted to share?
My favorite tip that's worked for me and has made a difference in my whole knitting career, crochet career, fiber arts, is that, well, first it starts with there are no mistakes but only variations. And a variation, if you like it and repeat it, becomes a pattern, and then you're original. So for me, and it's kind of a life analogy. It's a little long-winded, but if I am knitting on a project and I make a yarn over by accident and I look at it and go, oh, crap, I'm not going to take it down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look at it and go, you know what, I really don't like that. I'm not going to do it again, but I'm going to move on so I can finish this project and get through it. Because I'm not in it for the perfection. Mm-hmm. I don't know what perfection is. I personally have never seen perfection. I don't think anyone has. And I think when people talk perfection, they're wanting to draw more attention to themselves. I'm a perfectionist. So I've worked through my life trying to let it go. Mm-hmm. And so that yarn over is not bothering me. But I make it a conscious decision. You know what? I really like that. I'm going to repeat it 8 more times, and it's going to become part of my pattern, or I'm not going to. And then I knit up farther, and maybe I increase on the wrong side from the side that I was supposed to. But I leave it, and I go on. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I never take out, I never unravel, I never frog. I do sometimes, but most of the time I don't. I move on. It's my life analogy. You know, and my life has been so varied and colorful. I've made so many bad decisions. But I don't sit there and dwell on them, and I don't beat myself up over them. I analyze them and go, you know what, I don't want to do that again. that was really not a great decision, but I'm going to move on and learn from it, mm-hmm. and I'm going to experience life to the fullest. I'm going to enjoy the journey, and that's my analogy to knitting. So if you can take that into your needle arts and fiber arts and move on and experience as many patterns and yarns and variations as you can, you'll enjoy the end result much more. Because mm-hmm. who knows? Enjoy the journey. We never know if we'll meet the destination.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had an experience where your knitting just wasn't going to work out? Like a really bad knitting accident? Like a train wreck of knitting?
Bad knitting, train wreck of knitting. Well, here's the deal. First of all, I have 46 project bags sitting in my loft that are started projects. Mm-hmm. So some of them must be hiding in those bags. But I try to put them in pretty bags so they don't feel jilted. Like, each gets their own bag unique to the project that I'm working on. Mm-hmm. A lot of zebra, a lot of leopard. If you're banned to a plastic old yarn bag, you're probably never going to be finished. But I don't know, because I go into everything kind of knowing where I'm going with it. That's years of experience, you know, 40-some years of experience. But I periodically go through them. And I have an A pile, a B pile, and a C pile. A is, wow, I like that yarn. I like the pattern. I'm going to do something with this. But there may be 10 of those. So, you know, there's a cue. B is, I like something about this. I either like the yarn, I like the pattern, or the color, and I'm going to mix it with something else. I'm going to change something about it, but it has a basic inherent goodness to it. Mm-hmm. And C is, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. So I've got a whole group of the C's. And what I do is I really set myself free, but I pass those on. I donate them. I created my own foundation. I have the Stephen B. Creative Community Foundation mm-hmm. for channeling all of that stuff. Because I don't think that your knitting should be so wrong that it gives you anxiety and heartburn and stress. And, you know, we spend money on a lot of silly things in our life, mm-hmm. like the Rubik's Cube and the mood ring and, you know, whatever else, that entertain us. And our knitting entertains us. So, like my ABC pile, you have that in your closet and clothing. I know everybody does.
Yeah.
I have garments that I've never taken the price tag off of. Mm-hmm. And eventually you purge them. Or you should. Or you end up with a 7-bedroom house for yourself like I have. but I think that going through that and your realization that just move on mm-hmm. is how I get through those things. Mm-hmm. I don't need another knit item to save my life. I have a white sweater closet alone. It's all shades of white. Then I have a blue sweater closet and a green sweater room because green's my favorite sweater color. Mm-hmm. And then scarves and shawls and slippers and hats and gloves and everything that goes with it. And everybody that I know knits me things for my gifts, which mm-hmm. I love, because no one can appreciate a knit as much as a knitter. Mm-hmm. So, the point being, I have so many knits. If something's terribly wrong, I let it go.
Yeah.
And I move on. I really got to feel it. And I don't care that much about the money I've put into the yarn and stuff, mm-hmm. because either someone else can enjoy it, or I'll find another use for it. Mm-hmm. That's my journey on challenging knitting issues. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So on a related note, do you have a favorite thing that is like the best thing you've made or the thing you're most pleased with? Or, and it can be any medium because you're creating in more than just one thing. Or one thing that you're proudest of.
Well, commercially, I just love my Poncini that I've done and it's evolved in so many ways. And here's another book in the works, people. Just write this down. It's like the world really needs another flipping Poncini because I've taken that pattern for 7 years and beat it to death with variations on it. And it's now become kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing mm-hmm. where I've got the Poncini. The Poncini was developed because I wanted a poncho. I wanted to bring back the 70s. They weren't out yet anywhere. I'm thinking 2002, 2003. Nobody was doing ponchos. So I'm doing ponchos. And then Martha Stewart gets out of jail. And she's wearing a flippin' poncho out of... I'm not dogging Lion Brand by any means. But the homespun. So it was very heavy crochet, kind of horse blankety heavy. And I'm like, ah, crap. Because I was trying to do a cool poncho. And then... I'm thinking one point. So I came up with the Poncini, and my mother was cooking me fettuccine that night, and I'm like, poncho, Poncini, fettuccine, Poncini. So it came the Pancini was born. And it's a long strip that's sewn end to side with a combination of yarns. And I love Be Sweet. When I opened my new store, Stephen B., Be Sweet sent me a huge bouquet of flowers. And it said, Be Sweet loves Stephen B. So I took her under my arm, and I love bamboo, and I love their mohair, and I love the whole job creation program. Mm-hmm. So that's my Pancini. I use the yarns in combination to create it. And then into the color block version. And that night I was eating limoncello from Häagen-Dazs. So that became the Pancello. And it just keeps evolving. Currently in my room right now, I'm working on the Mancini because I think every man should be wearing a cowl. So that's my new campaign for 2015 and 16. Why are men in the U.S. not wearing cowls? I can't figure it out.
It's a good question. They're more functional than scarves.
Yes.
Especially if you work with your hands.
Right. And now somehow it's been deemed a woman's accessory. And we're so hung up on our masculinity in this country and the strict line between what defines it. And yet in Europe, I mean, you go to Amsterdam, every guy's got a cowl on because you're riding your bike and you pull it up over your head and it just makes practical sense. Plus, it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking down the streets in Amsterdam shopping, and even the main department stores have all the window mannequins in men's cowls. The men mm-hmm. have cowls on. With their briefcase and their big fur collar. And mm-hmm. it's so fun to see the dichotomy between what's menswear in one place and what's menswear in another. And I was just in England, and I went to, oh my God, Color Inspiration. I bought every piece I could. The Indian culture
mm-hmm.
wedding store.
Mm-hmm.
The men's suits, hot pink, lemon yellow, tangerine orange, royal blue. And I was buying, I didn't buy the suits, but I bought all the scarves they wear with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have this whole, like, this is menswear in another ethnic, out-of-the-box thinking zone.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to visit these zones. Because if we stay in our own box, we can't experience the world full on. That's what I put in my knitting.
It's very frustrating, though, because what you're saying does, when you talk about gender expectations in the States. The thing that reminds me most, because I do very traditional knitting right now, that's where my heart is. But when you knit for people's kids, especially little boys, blue, green, brown, khaki.
You can't even put a purple stripe in sometimes.
Nope, it depends on the parents, but
yeah.
For the most part.
And a parent that uses lime green and, I don't know, eggplant together is a radical parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow.
Well, and I think it's also perpetuated in the stores, so they don't offer it. And the people who shop, there's a very limited range of what you can do because of what people expect and what people think is acceptable. And I really like how you and Stephen are pushing color and all of these things that people seem to be very apprehensive about.
We teach you how to work with color so that it works for you.
Because mm-hmm.
people look at a skein of hot pink or acid green or neon orange, and I can't do this. I love it, but I can't do this. We show you how to do it. And do it so it works for you, and that it is not a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, it's funny because we really need to amp up the men's area of hand knitters.
Mm-hmm.
Knitting in general. I mean, most men don't wear sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
And most men currently are shopping. This is the broad statement,
mm-hmm.
but most men are shopping at Walmart and Target.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wearing knit goods that are fleece or you know, athletic fibers and all that stuff, tech stuff. But no one's wearing sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the era of the sweaters. And remember Bill Cosby in the 80s and all that? That was the era of sweaters.
And Star Trek. Wesley Crusher had great sweaters.
Great. And we've kind of gone on it. So it ebbs and flows, and sometimes knitting's on a 20-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I feel that's kept it alive for the hand knitters
is Ravelry, I think.
Ravelry and the internet.
Yeah.
Everything's in your face daily. And the old days, when you went to the yarn shop, you were only exposed to new knitting patterns when you went to the shop and opened up a knitting book from Plymouth, from any of the brands, Bernat's,
Brusbusilla,
Unger.
Yeah, but there wasn't as much published as there is now.
No, everybody made the same baby sweater.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you got tired of making what was out there, knitting kind of died for a while, and then it would come back. So we had the 70s that was strong crochet and knitting, and then 80, 81, knitting started failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first eyelash came out in 1981.
Really?
From Europe.
Really?
Eyelash, 1981. And it was very expensive.
Hmm.
And no one caught on to it until we had the whole fun fur craze. Lion Brand was able to see that mm-hmm. and go, we need to make this a pop culture trend. And so 2000, 2001, 2002, fun fur hit the market. And do you remember Joanne Fabrics? The women were walking out with shopping carts full of it. They were
yep.
fighting over it. I couldn't keep it in. Barry from Trendsetter couldn't ship me fast enough on the novelty yarns.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on a cycle, and we're now on a permanent ride because of the internet and Ravelry, and every day we're exposed to what Webs has on sale, what Ravelry's new patterns are, who the next up-and-coming designer is, who the hot indie person is, and so that can't go away.
Do you think the fact that the community is interconnected is part of it, too? Because when you were just going to the yarn shop to buy your things and then you took them home, there's not a lot of community unless you went out and sought out, for example, a knitting group or a knitting community of your own. Do you think that might be part of it? Because
it's very much part of it. Because I'm telling you, again, no offense to anybody, but we knitters can sometimes be an odd lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, sometimes, like, I sit at home by myself and I'm like, my way of meeting people is going to a knitting group or a coffee shop where people knit. And wherever I sit and knit, someone will talk to me.
Yep.
And I have a little story that I go off on a tangent about. And that is, I equate knitting to dog walking. If you have a pet and you're walking your dog, you're going down the street and you pass someone, we're in an era where no one looks at anybody. We avert eye contact. It means time out of our schedule. It means I have to listen to them or say hi. But if you have a pet, you stop because of the animal. Even if you don't have one, oh, what a cute dog, what a cute whatever. Sometimes kids work, but not as well. And then the pet. And then if you both have a dog, forget it. Like pretty soon next week, you're off in the dog park together and having lunch. Mm-hmm. Knitting does the same thing. So I'm sitting every day in the airport for the last year. And a lady comes up to me and brings me a Starbucks coffee and says, here, I know you're knitting. I thought maybe you'd like a coffee. Oh. Where does that happen? So it's a bonding of the knitting community that brings us together. People we'd never talk to otherwise. We meet them in the shop. We meet in the shop. It's like Cheers for Knitters, where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
And that's really rewarding, comforting. It's like macaroni and cheese. You know, it's just comforting. And it definitely holds knitting strong. And the more you knit around people, the more you finish and complete, and the more you're inspired to perform. Mm-hmm. And so you get through your projects and your stash. And, you know, we've got to stop getting hung up on our stash. You know what? It's just going to exist. It's going to happen. Tell your husband to go get a hobby because you're going to keep buying yarn. So he might as well just keep up. Stop chastising yourself. And if you feel bad about it, you know what? Donate it. Someone else could use it. And that's why I do my foundation. Mm-hmm. We pass on yarn and needles to any organization that's willing to teach people how to knit. Churches, schools, Girl Scouts, Boys, whatever. Mm-hmm. We do it. So we pass it on.
Yep. Okay, so you're talking about community and how you find community in everywhere when you knit because knitters are drawn to each other. It's magnetic. Social media, you do a bit, and by a bit, I mean a lot. So I found for myself that Instagram is super motivational and it inspires me a lot because I'm seeing what other people are working on from day to day to day. My job is broadcasting. It's journalism. So being creative isn't my job, but being creative is what you do. So do you find that to be additionally, like, do you find it inspiring to see what other people are working on, or how does social media work for you?
Well, social media is different for me, and being that I'm a little older generation, you know, when the whole advent of Ravelry came on the scene and Facebook, it takes me a little longer to get up and running. And I have an amazing team of 22 people that help me all the time. Mm-hmm. And Instagram still, I have to say, is a challenge for me to keep on that all the time and to be looking at what people are doing. So thank God for plane flights and airport delays and all that, because that helps me catch up. Because otherwise, I'm running a million-dollar yarn industry business under my brand that needs my attention.
Yeah.
And I honestly use it to shout out about what I'm doing, more so than being influenced by what others are doing. Because I love to share with the world, and I wanted to be an actor, and now it's my stage. Mm-hmm. It's really how it works for me. I found Pinterest kind of fascinating because it's just the pictures, and it's immediate, and if I like it, it's on my board, you know, and so I can collect. So it's kind of like what I used to do in the fashion industry when I was, you know, commercially. I would have lookbooks, and I was constantly, every Italian fashion magazine, and that's what I use for that. So I do use it in that sense. I love complimenting people that are doing things that I think are inspirational. Mm-hmm. So I love giving back in that sense. Mm-hmm. I really don't personally care about what your dinner looks like. So that's a bump, speed bump for me. So yeah. I have to filter that stuff out. Or I know pets and cats get a lot of attention, and kids. Mm-hmm. So I have to jump over that stuff because I don't have enough brain cells left. And my Rolodex gets a bit stuck once in a while, so at my age. So I have to keep going. Because my art knitting is really what... Okay, so I do my patterns and commercial yarn usage for my business. When I need to escape, I go to my art knitting, mm-hmm. the cassette tape and the chain link and all that stuff. So for me, it's two different worlds.
Yeah.
And
so when you're not knitting for work, you're knitting for fun?
Yes. And then it's the crazy stuff. Right now I bought bolts and bolts of pom-pom fringe from a fabric manufacturer in neon green, and I'm knitting with that. So I'm going to have this huge pom-pom sweater. It's going to look like a big chenille poof when I'm done. But I've got to make myself smile, because sometimes life gets a bit rocky, and my knitting is really, it's where my friends are, it's where my family is, it's where my income is generated, it's my safety place, it's my addiction, it's all those things that other people's lives are filled otherwise. Mine is the knitting and the fiber use. Mm-hmm.
You can find everything mentioned in this week's episode on our show notes, which are located at knitmoregirlspodcast.com, and you can send any comments, questions, or feedback to me, Jasmine, Jasmin, at knitmoregirlspodcast.com.
Or me, Gigi, Gigi, at knitmoregirlspodcast.com.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Everlaps as knitmoregirls. And we have a great Ravelry group full of interesting people, and you should absolutely be a part of it.
This is Stephen of Stephen B.
Jasmine.
And Gigi.
Telling you to knit more.